Let them talk with Paul DiRienzo, keeping an eye on the New World Order. 1:30 Wednesday night, Thursday morning, following Robert Knight. Let them talk on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Thank you.
And another exciting, never ends, you know. You gotta love the Phantom.
Keeps coming.
Keeps right on coming. Phantom, which,
great Haitian band.
We were at the lead singer's birthday party.
Kinkino. Hello?
Shortly after. Can you hear it?
No, I can't hear any talking. I could hear the music. Hello, hello, hello. Oh, there I am. Hi, everybody. It's me, Miss Moosey.
And I'm Paul DiRienzo, and you're listening to Let 'Em Talk. And below us, you're hearing Phantom. And as we were saying, we were at King Kino's birthday party.
That's right.
Shortly after the whole incident. You know, Phantom was the band that was playing that night, August 9th, 1997.
Yeah, the nightclub.
When the whole, at the, back then it was called Club Rendezvous. It's got another name now.
But and the club outside of which?
Flatbush Avenue.
This whole
Admiral Louima thing.
Evening began.
Began right out front. And where Justin Volpe...
we're learning more and more about.
Lost it and took a man down, as he said.
Yep.
And he thought he got hit and went
one of those
looking
mistaken
for somebody
identity
to get problem. Revenge against the person. And in the end, he's the one sitting in jail. And Admiral Louima was sitting on the witness stand. So it's a reversal of roles. This is the latest Associated Press, just keeping people updated. I don't know if you heard it on TV or not, but the patrolman who confessed to torturing a Haitian immigrant in a police station bathroom had uniformed partners in crime who shared his thirst for revenge. A prosecutor said Wednesday at the brutality trial of four officers. The disgraced patrolman, Justin Volpe, was the driving force behind what happened to Abner Louima in that bathroom, Assistant U.S. Attorney Ellen Vingrad told a jury during closing arguments. But he had help, and the inescapable truth in the evidence at this trial is shown it was Charles Schwartz, who was all too willing to give it to him. Schwartz is accused of holding down Louima while Volpe rammed a broken broomstick up his rectum in a fit of rage. The officers, Vingrad said, wanted to punish Louima because they thought, mistakenly, he had punched Volpe in a disturbance outside a Brooklyn nightclub at about 4 a.m. on August 9, 1997. It's hard to believe that something so depraved and so cruel could actually happen, let alone that it was two New York City police officers in uniform who did it, Vingrad said in a three-hour summation of nearly 4 weeks of testimony in Brooklyn federal court. Schwartz, 33, along with Thomas Weiss, 35, and Thomas Bruder, 33, also is accused of denying Louima his civil rights by joining Volpe and beating the Haitian immigrant in a patrol car during two stops en route to the 70 precinct, station house. The officer supervisor, Sergeant Michael Belomo, 37, is charged with making false reports to cover up the assault on Louima and another Haitian man, Patrick Antoine. If convicted, Belomo, Weiss, and Bruder face up to 10 years in prison. Schwartz, because his charges involved a sexual assault, faces a maximum of life without parole. Attorneys for Bruder and Weiss used their closings to argue that their client's only mistake was working with Volpe. There's no question that Thomas Weiss sits here because of what that monster Justin Volpe did to Abner Louima in that bathroom, said Weiss's attorney, Joseph DeCopina. The attorneys noted that Louima never identified Bruder or Weiss as being among his four assailants and that his version of when and where he was beaten was inconsistent with that of prosecutors. DeCopina also alleged that Louima and his family lied about the patrol car assaults to bolster his report of the bathroom attack and his subsequent $155 million claim against the city. The two remaining defense attorneys, including Schwartz's, were to make their closings on Thursday morning, followed by Judge Eugene Nickerson's instructions to jurors. The jury of seven men and five women heard Vingrad argue that Louima was arrested, beaten, and later tortured in a tragic case of mistaken identity. Oh, it would have been okay if they had the real guy.
It would have been their correct
cousin
person.
Jay. His cousin Jay was the guy who actually hit Volpe. The assailant was actually Louima's cousin. All four defendants responded by taking the law into their own hands in a violent and brutal way, Vingrad said in urging a guilty verdict. This is not the streets of Brooklyn, he continued. This is not the back of a patrol car. This is not a station house bathroom. This is a court of law, and this courtroom, the rule of law, must prevail. Faced with overwhelming evidence, Volpe pled guilty last week. The plea came after four former 70 precinct Patrolman said Volpe was brandishing a stick and bragging, "I took a man down," around the time of the bathroom incident. In his plea, Volpe, 27, told the court that a second officer in the bathroom saw what was going on and did nothing to stop it. He was not required to name the officer, nor was the jury told of his statements. No witness at trial, including Luima, could positively identify Schwartz as the second officer inside the bathroom, but Vinegrad pointed out that Luima, a one-time security guard who recovered from severe internal injuries to become living proof of the horrors of police brutality, had consistently told authorities that the officer who restrained him in the bathroom was the driver of the patrol car he was put in after his arrest. Records show the driver was Schwartz. Also, two officers testified they spotted Schwartz leading a handcuffed Luima in the general direction of the bathroom on the morning of the attack, and investigators recovered the whisk end of a broken broom from the station house, which Vinegrad waved in front of the jury. "Isn't it obvious from all the evidence that Justin Volpe used the top half of this broom to sodomize Abner Luima in the bathroom with his help?" Vinegrad asked, pointing at Schwartz. The officer had no visible reaction.
Flatbush part of New York town.
Oh, hello.
All one body gotta heal and grow. Abner Luima, his name. This is how he came to play. When a club closed for the night, people broke into a fight. All one body got a healing throw. Just in a Volpe policeman, brought to the ground by an unknown man.
Oh, keep my cool.
Volpe grabbed Luima, said he was just standing by.
Oh, keep my cool.
All one body got a healing throw. Beat him in the car to the 7-0. Put him in a cell for an hour or so. Drag him from his holding cell. Who to what no tongue can tell.
Ain't my fault.
All one body got a healing blow. Cause this crime, come say Julie anytime. Blame hate on mayor, blame police. All of us must hold this peace. Come on, one body got a healing goal. I got a healing code. So I've been in the hospital for a while. Four policemen bound for trial.
Be no four.
And near 10,000 march today. Some set to fight and some to pray. Oh, one body got a healing code. Ask my ma, hear what she said. All one people on a judgment day. all when body got a healing call.
Oh,
oh, ain't no fool. All when body got a healing call.
Ballad of Abner Louima by our friend Stephen Smith, and he's got a lot of things happening, and you should follow his career because it's really been taking off. And
He's got a new album coming out on Rounder Records. Now's the time, and they're going to have an opening party too.
Where's that going to be?
Angel Orensant's Foundation, 172 Norfolk Street.
Right off of Houston.
It's between Houston and Stanton. Thursday, June 17th, 1999. Reception 8:30, performance 9:30.
Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be on the internet too, but I haven't found it yet.
We had a little bit of trouble
over
with that.
Liquid what?
Liquid Audio. Liquid in a historic audio arrangement with Liquid Audio, a new song by Stefan will be posted every week for 12 weeks, starting with The Darling Sun on June 2nd, 1999. Free downloads for the first week of each song's posting. Well, today was the first day.
You know, that company, Liquid Audio, is sort of stolen. It's come as close as they could of stealing the name of a longtime program on BAI, Jeannie Hopper's Liquid Sound Lounge.
Well, I never.
Another corporate ripoff.
I like that show, though.
Yeah, she's got nice music.
She's good music, yeah.
Jeannie's a good person.
Well, try it anyway, because maybe it'll start working. Maybe just because today was the first day that it didn't work properly. So that's it. www.liquidaudio.com.
So, and coming up on June 20th is another interesting event, and we're going to be going to some depth about this one.
Yeah, that's the Courageous Resistor Awards. Refuse and Resist is proud to announce our 1999 Courageous Resistor Awards, which will be presented on June 20th at the Washington Square Methodist Church in New York City. We've given these awards periodically in the past and hope to present them annually beginning this year. Refuse and Resist is dedicated to creating a climate, culture, and community of resistance that takes on the repressive politics of cruelty ruling this land. Courageous resistors are people who have refused to remain silent and complicit in the face of intolerance and repression. We award these resistors so that they will know that they are not alone in the battle and to give inspiration and courage to others. If we succeed in our goals, there will be too many courageous resistors to keep up with. We look forward to this day. Most people have found the past Courageous Resistor Award ceremonies to be life-changing events, full of inspiration and power. People leave feeling re-energized and ready to take the struggle against politics of cruelty to a higher level. Now this year, the people that are going to be honored are Iris Baez and her family for their continuing, unwavering fight against police brutality and justice, not only for her son Anthony, who was murdered by NYPD officer Lavoti, but for all victims of police attacks. Also, Emily Lyons, the nurse severely injured in the January 1998 bombing of a Birmingham abortion clinic, which also killed a security guard. Emily, despite losing an eye and sustaining other serious injuries in the blast, as well as continuing threats on her personally from anti-abortionists, has refused to be intimidated and instead has become a national spokesperson for the pro-choice cause. She has said, "I am no longer working for just one clinic, but for all clinics in this country." Also, Adrian Rich, for refusing to accept the 1997 Medal for the Arts from President Clinton, believing that art should be a vehicle for change, Rich refused, quote, to be used by the Clinton administration. Reverend Gregory Dell, who was subjected to a church trial and then stripped of his clerical duties by the United Methodist Church for conducting a service to sanctify the union of two men in his Chicago church. Professor David Protas and his students at Northwestern University uncovered evidence that saved the lives of Illinois death row prisoners and freed them. One man, Anthony Porter, who was scheduled for execution, was freed in the fall of 1998 when Protas and his journalism students tracked down and videotaped the confession of a man who actually committed the 1982 murders that Porter had been convicted of. And the teachers and students in Oakland, California, who initiated teach-ins in Oakland schools around the death penalty and the case of death row political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal. Their plans ignited a firestorm of controversy, including tremendous opposition from school administration, police, and media commentators. But they refused to back down, and their persistence resulted in front-page coverage in the mainstream press and brought national attention to Mumia's case. And there's also have been some very interesting people who've received the awards in the past. Those are the people that will receive it this year on the 20th. But in the past, people like Dr. Lawrence White, a California medical doctor who announced he would destroy his medical records rather than turn over to the state the name of people suspected of having AIDS. Also, Robbie Connell, the creator of satirical political posters that have gone up on walls across the country. Elaine Norwood, a North Carolina abortion clinic escort who is unrepentant in defending women even after being convicted of assault upon an anti-abortionist who was harassing a woman trying to enter a clinic. Kelly Peterson, a high school student who initiated and continued a club for gay and lesbian students in Salt Lake City despite threats from the school administration. Mumia Abu-Jamal, who was framed for the murder of a Philadelphia cop and has spent almost 20 years on death row. Antonio and Margarita Rosario, who formed Parents Against Police Brutality after their son was shot in the back by a police officer in the Bronx. Phil Zimmerman, creator of Pretty Good Privacy, which encodes computer data to prevent government snooping. The town of Billings, Montana, which mounted a citywide campaign against racist and anti-Semitic attacks. Sister Helen Prejean, crusader against the death penalty and author of Dead Man Walking. Jocelyn Elders, the former Surgeon General who lost her job because of her stance on abortion and sex education in schools. Jose Palacio, a Department of Motor Vehicles employee who refused to check legal documentation of immigration status as required by state law. And Magali Laurent, New York City emergency room nurse who reported the police assault of Abner Louima.
And guess what I have from September 27th, 1997, 2 years ago, the
award ceremony
for Magali Laurent. And Magali Laurent is an interesting person. She was the nurse on duty at Coney Island Hospital when they wheeled in Abner Louima. She was the one who knew that it was a police attack and arranged to make sure the media and Mike McAlary, who came to the hospital and interviewed Abner and
wrote about it in the Daily News.
Right, and it was because of her. And she was awarded, and we talked to her quite extensively. First, this is the actual award ceremony. We're going to play some of that. And then I did an interview with her afterwards.
Yeah.
And we'll talk with Magali Laurent via tape.
A winner of the Courageous Resister Award.
In 1997.
I want to ask Robert to come up.
Robert Rockwell is the National Chair of Refuse and Resist, and he's been on this show before.
Right away, folks. Let's get it together. I just wanted to say something briefly to present the award to Magali. Most people know that I'm a doctor, and you know I went through medical school and training, and I worked in an emergency room, and I know for a fact that the socialization of that is that they try to teach you to ignore a lot of things. You know, they try to teach you to turn out things and to forget about things that are going on in the emergency room. And to be a good doctor or a good nurse is nothing else than to be a good person. And I just wanted to say that as a medical person and as a national secretary of Refuse and Resist, I'm doubly excited to be able to present you this award. I'll go ahead and read the award. It says, Courageous Resister Award, presented to Magalie Laurent by Refuse and Resist for her courageous personal resistance to police brutality and refusal to remain silent about injustice.
Thank you. I'm really a little bit shaky about all of this because I didn't think I deserve all of that. And and I am not gonna be selfish and taking this by myself. I must give some of the credit here to my brother-in-law. And my husband, who made the follow-up calls after my initial call. It was him, who took the streets with the Luima family to try to find justice for Luima. For Abner Luima. And on August 9th, Saturday, my husband spent almost 2 hours with internal affairs, which was not meant anything to them. His call went unanswered as well as mine. And I hope this serves as a wake-up call to everyone, every hospital workers, to report these vicious incidents when they occur at the hospital. And I want to say that Abner Luima was in the hospital since 8 o'clock in the morning. A call should have been made to internal affairs sooner than that. Thank you again.
Well, I mean, okay. I don't really know what to say, but one thing I can say, you know, I'm going to tell you what my daddy told me, you know, while we were sitting there. And then she said, my God, Jean-Claude, you know what I'm going to say? And then she said to me that speakers tonight already have said everything I would like to say. No, I said no. They almost said everything you would like to say, but there's still something that you still can say or we can say. Is to say thank you to Refuse and Resist. Okay, I'm going to be short, but, you know, Refuse and Resist, thank you. You have my support, and you also will have the support of other Haitian activists in our community as well. Okay, go ahead.
I almost forgot to tell you, friends. I see that I have friends now. I could talk. You know, on Sunday, I had an incident at the hospital where I work, where I had a little attack placed on me by another nurse. But the 60% came to the hospital to arrest me. They called the squad team to arrest me. Now, do I look like a violent person to you? Do I need the squad team to arrest me? I don't think so. The captain came, many detectives came to arrest me at the hospital. But I must say again, my brother-in-law came to my rescue that night. They couldn't arrest me.
Okay, on stage with us, Magali's children. Her husband, that's my brother, Andre.
Okay.
She has two set of twins. These two are twins, that's Jonathan and Alan. Those two are also twins. That's Fifi and Patrick. This is Larry. This tall one here is her firstborn. That's Jerry. Before we leave the stage, one thing I like to say to refuse and resist. This kind of action, I don't know how to put in words, appreciate what they're doing, because this kind of doing will encourage others in the future to come forward. Thank you, refuse and resist.
Thank you to support me and my family. Everybody get together. In peace, quiet. Everybody peace, get together in New York City. No racist, no prejudice. Refuse and resist together. Everybody peace, New York City, number one. Numero uno. Numero un. Numero uno, number one. Get together, peace, and quiet.
Okay. I want to just say right now before you guys leave that, yes, I want to say before you guys leave that King Keen on the Phantoms they're going to be, I think, here later on. They really were meant to be here, and unfortunately there was a miscommunication in them being here. So I also want to thank, before we go, I want to thank Judson Church, because they donated the space. I want to thank Kendall for the sound. I want to thank all of you for coming. But I'd also like us to bring up one more time before we leave, and Mr. Stephen Smith. So please put your hands together, and let's have him end our wonderful day. Wonderful evening, and thank you all for your energy. One more thank you.
Thank you to Francisca and Rena, Asian community fellow, to everybody here. Black and white, there's only one. One blood. Yes. One blood. Yes. One blood. Yes. New York City, peace, everybody, the world.
Yes. One blood. Okay, please put your hands together for Stephen Smith. Here he comes, I hope. Thank you.
opened a few doors for me a few times.
Yeah, that too. I mean,
we did a little article which will come out in our next issue about the threats against you, but I had no way to reach you, and I wanted to find a way
I was
to
from
reach
WCAI.
You.
After you're done.
Yeah.
Okay. It's good to meet you.
We're from BAI.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm from.
Thank you.
Hi, Michael. You're from WBAI, and I was wondering if you could take a couple of minutes and tell us a story of what happened to you the other day in the hospital.
I was virtually attacked by a nurse in the hospital. She yelled all kind of things.
Can you tell me how it happened? Tell me the story of how the confrontation began. You were on a regular shift as a nurse at the hospital, and you were walking. What happened?
I went into a room where she was working, and I just said hi to her, like always. She was one person that was talking to me, actually, after the Louima case. And then, after a little, 1 hour later, she reported that I bruised her. I went into the room and I attacked her. And I was called by nursing administrator and a supervisor. And I was spoke to about, of what happened. I didn't know what happened. And, we left the office. I told them I didn't know anything. I didn't know what she was saying. But she said that I bruised her right shoulder, which I had no recollection of, because I didn't touch the lady. I don't know what happened to her. And an hour later, she just attacked me. She just pushed me and just punched me.
Where did that happen?
In the hospital, in a room in the hospital.
Just out of nowhere, she attacked you?
Out of nowhere, she just attacked me. We work in the hospital. I didn't expect anything like that from her, especially from her.
How did she attack you?
She just pushed me, and then, she punched me over here, and then she started yelling that she's going to kill me and everything. And about 2 hours later, she came back with two detectives. And at that time, my blood pressure went up very high. I didn't know I had a blood pressure problem, but it went up very high. They had me into a critical care area in the hospital. One of the detectives approached my bed and said that they wanted to talk to me. And he was signaled out of the room by one of the nursing supervisors. And while I was walking down the hallway in the hospital, there were a lot of cops, detectives, and they said that they wanted to talk to me. We spoke for a while. They questioned me.
What kind of questions did they ask me?
They wanted to know what happened between me and the other nurse. But I told them as far as I know what happened. And they said that it was a brawl between the two of us. Okay, I accept that it was a brawl between the two of us. But, it didn't take so many cops to come for just me. I don't think I'm that violent. I wasn't armed.
You said a SWAT team came?
They called a SWAT, about seven of them. The captain of the precinct came, the 6-0.
Which precinct?
The 6-0.
Did they arrest you?
No, they didn't arrest me. I called my brother-in-law, and he had internal affairs in the line. He called the DA. From there, I don't know what happened. When they called me into the office again to question me, they said, I could go home. There was nothing to arrest. They had nothing to arrest anybody on, they said.
So they have the other nurse wasn't arrested either?
No.
Is there a complaint lodged against her by you?
Yes.
And
with the hospital or with the police?
With the police and the hospital.
So you have a complaint against her? Do you think they might press charges against the nurse?
Well, we are working on that.
Is this the only incident that have happened to you? This one obviously was physical, but what kind of treatment have you been getting from other nurses and other personnel in the hospital?
They have been very cold to me. A few of them has told me that they don't want to see my face anymore in the hospital. I have no place in the hospital.
that I am not to talk in the hospital anymore.
Did this nurse say anything about police when she assaulted you?
Yes, she said that you're messing with the wrong one, you're messing with NYPD.
So you think that she had some connection with the police?
I believe her boyfriend or husband is with the CXO.
I just want to ask you, have you witnessed or have you heard of any other incident that has been similar to or other incidents of police brutality towards people that they have arrested other than Abner Luima?
I've once had to come forward again for one person. So he came into the hospital where his eye was all swollen. He had an altercation with his wife and he was arrested by the cops. He said they did this to him.
Some people have said that there's some relationship between what goes on in the emergency room. They point at the Coney Island. I know you're in Brooklyn. But that the police and some of the people in the emergency room have a close relationship when it comes to incidents like this. What would you comment on that?
I've said before that the NYPD and the hospital is very close. The hospital is very protective of NYPD.